In Britain this week, the Leveson inquiry into the News Corp phone hacking scandal continues, with Rupert Murdoch and his son James back on the stand. The week's big revelation was a trove of 163 emails released by the Murdochs between a News Corp lobbyist and one of the culture minister's closest aides. The trove dates back to News Corp's bid for B Sky B, a failed acquisition which would have granted the company an even stronger monopoly over British media. The emails detail confidential conversations among regulators and with lobbyists for News Corp about the Murdoch bid, suggesting a cozy relationship between the British government and News Corp. The email release seemed designed to guarantee mutually assured destruction, causing havoc for David Cameron's government, which would very much prefer not to be associated with the disgraced Murdoch clan. And yet, despite all the evidence to the contrary, on the stand, Rupert Murdoch sought to portray himself as a political naif, a kindly old ink-stained wretch.
You know, I have to admit that some newspapers are closer to my heart than others, but I also have to say that I failed.
Peter Jukes is reporting on the trial for the Daily Beast. He says that Murdoch's protestations are undercut by his political side games.
So you have a statement and an action totally at odds with each other.
Add to the web of circumstantial evidence visits literally through the back door of 10 Downing Street. And most deliciously, the report from a Daily Telegraph reporter, Ian Martin. Tell me what Ian Martin has written.
There is a case where Jeremy Hunt, who was potentially going to be a senior cabinet minister dealing with communications as the culture minister, was invited to a News Corp party, and a Telegraph journalist saw him hiding behind a tree because he was trying to get to meet to James Murdoch and didn't want journalists to see it. You know, that's what you have to court them, but not to be seen to be courting them. That's the image. There's another, Rupert talked about this, where he, I think within about 2 weeks of David Cameron entering number 10, Rupert comes in, but by the back door. So he said, I often came in the back door. And he added in the Leveson inquiry, maybe that's because it's slightly nearer my apartment.
Yeah, he was just taking the shortcut. As it turns out, that may be exactly what was taking place.
I mean, the optics of it are not good because we talk about back doors and back channels. There's one more image which may haunt the Prime Minister even more in the weeks to come, because we have to remember we still have evidence from Rebecca Brooks, who was the CEO of News International, that News International was deemed to be slightly close to the police and whining and dining them during this whole phase when they should have been investigating phone hacking. It emerged that a police horse had been lent to Rebecca Brooks. This horse was returned in rather bad condition a year or so later, ridden too much. And one of its riders was David Cameron. And this is called Horsegate, inevitably. And the connections still might return to damage beyond Cameron himself.
One of the odd twists to this is that to the extent that Murdoch was cozying up to David Cameron, the cozying seems to be over. On his own Twitter feed, Murdoch has been quite hostile to Cameron and seems to have pretty much turned against him. What's going on?
Well, it's funny, isn't it? The proprietor of the world's third biggest media conglomerate has to take to social media to get his voice heard. I think there's some irony there. And yes, for the last 3 months, his main target, David Cameron, figures time and time again.
I don't understand what there is for Murdoch to gain.
This is the bizarre question, isn't it? Because, of course, he can do great damage by revealing these back channels to the Conservative-led government. But actually, mud sticks both ways. News Corp, they don't come out of it well either. So I think this is a slight act of desperation.
In your coverage in the Daily Beast, you suggested this could be the beginning of the end for the whole Murdoch empire, at least in the UK. And it doesn't bode well for the coalition government and David Cameron. Tell me how this is all going to shake out.
There's a difference between the Murdoch empire and News Corp, though obviously on paper they have all the voting power. I think News Corp will survive. The dynasty is over. James will no longer succeed as chair and CEO of News Corp.
And Cameron.
I'm in divided opinion. I will happily place myself on the left, center left. I'm not sure I want a newspaper proprietor, no matter how angry, to bring down my elected government. Despite, you know, my reservations about Cameron and the government, I would like that to be determined by the British people in the ballot box, not by the back door and a newspaper proprietor.
Now, you happen to be from England.
From Britain, please. There's no such nation as England.
You had a writer there a few centuries back named Shakespeare. As you watch Murdoch...
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day, Bob?
No. How about King Lear? Disappointing children, under assault, raving. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I did write a piece for the Daily Beast about his tweets. They reminded me of King Lear on the heath. I shall do such things. I don't know what they shall be, but they shall be the terror of all the earth. And he was saying, I will have my revenge coming soon. It will be brutal. You know, those kind of tweets. There is something Shakespearean and tragic about Murdoch, and something quite magnificent in some way. And he will leave the stage at some point, probably not too distant future. And in some ways, there will be a loss in public life.
Peter, many thanks.
Thanks, Bob.
Peter Jukes has covered the Murdoch scandal for the Daily Beast. He's working on a book called Bad Press, Fall of the House of Murdoch.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.